Discussions in Depth Psychology is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. Your host is Bonnie Bright.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussions in Depth Psychology. I'm Bonnie Bright, and this series is dedicated to bringing you discussions with some of the individuals who are making really exciting contributions to and also through the field of depth psychology. And, of course, this series is powered by Pacifica. And today my guest is Heather Beck, who is an author and a speaker. And Heather is pursuing her PhD in depth psychology and somatics at Pacifica. Thanks so much for speaking with me today, Heather.
Oh, Bonnie, I'm thrilled. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, I'm really glad to have you with me because you are leading a pretty exciting life by all accounts. And I want to dig into what it is that got you to that point, and particularly some of your experiences and information and knowledge that you are gaining in the somatics program at Pacifica. I'm interested in knowing how that's affecting your already very successful career. So we're going to dig into all of that in just a moment. But first, let me read your bio so that everybody has some background on you, and then we'll jump in.
Okay.
Heather McCloskey Beck is an inspirational author, speaker, musician, social activist, and founder of the global peace movement, Peace Flash. Dedicated to creating dynamic peace within our world, Heather is a columnist for the Huffington Post and frequently speaks to audiences across the United States and Canada. With a growing following on her Facebook pages that has surpassed 1 million fans, Beck offers virtual and on-site workshops, online courses, and has a private counseling and intuitive metamorphic healing practice. Heather is dedicated to working with women around the world, helping them to create safe, meaningful, and inspired lives. Her book, Take the Leap, teaches us how to create a life we truly love, a life that is creatively inspired and aligned with our own unique calling. Currently, Heather is studying for her PhD in depth psychology with a somatic specialization at Pacifica. So, oh, and one more thing I should mention, Heather, before we jump in. I actually saw somewhere on your website or in your materials that there is a quote about you from Pat Benatar. And Pat Benatar says, Heather McCloskey Beck is a spiritual visionary. Read her book and feel your life transform in amazing ways. Oh, that's a wonderful comment from her. Maybe we should start at the beginning. How
sure.
is it that you actually came to write that book that has clearly had an effect on her and so many other people?
Take the Leap. Well, it's actually, I realized when I was creating a proposal for a book with my potential publishers, I was really thinking about, at that time, presenting a book about Peace Flash, because I'm very much, as you read, I'm a peace activist in our world, and I'm interested in the idea that when we are impassioned and doing what we love to do, we create what I call dynamic peace within our own lives. So this idea of being called to finding our own gifts and living them was what was deeply moving me. And my publisher said, not Peace Flash. You've got another book there. And so we discussed it a little bit, and I wrote another proposal, and it was Take the Leap. And it was very much about the idea of living one's calling, discovering what your gifts are, and then actually finding ways to live them in your life. And when I reflect on this, I've realized that this has been a lifelong process. And fascinatingly enough, I realized that many years ago, when I was about probably 19, I had been walking on a beach at the end of Montauk, which is the very end of Long Island out past the Hamptons. And I had written in the sand an outline quite spontaneously, just walking down the beach. And I probably walked for maybe a half mile or a mile, and then I stopped. And this outline was very much the ideas of how to create a happy life. And so on my way back, the water had swept away my outline. It was just gone. And I was left with it in my being, and I quickly wrote it down. I had a piece of paper back at my little campsite, and it ended up being 6 or 7 or 8 pages. And I mailed it off to a friend. 35 years later, 40 years later, Take the Leap had just been published. And my friend said, I found these while going through things. And what it was an outline for Take the Leap, only maybe 40 years earlier. So
Wow. It's
clearly something that had been brewing in me for a very long time. And as we know, when we go through life, things morph and they have ways of coming out and expressing in unique ways. And Take the Leap clearly was something that I needed to express, and it's part of my life's work. I can feel it very deeply in me.
I love to hear that story, and there's just so much that's coming to mind as you're telling that story. I mean, first of all, I'm so aware of how critically important it is that we each find our own gifts. This is what provides meaning in life, right, is finding where our gifts are and what we can do to actually unleash that genius within, as Michael Mead talks about. I'm a huge fan of his work as well. And I'm really also very intrigued by the idea that you had essentially a snapshot of that book decades earlier. And that takes me so much to what James Hillman talks about, of course, as the acorn theory. And he tells those stories in his book, A Soul's Code, about kids when they were younger and then what they ended up doing with their lives. And he draws the correlation between the two. And it's just so absolutely fascinating. So I want to hold that topic as we go throughout our conversation here today, but also move into the depth psychology piece of it. Because obviously when you began writing that book, Take the Leap, you hadn't necessarily delved as deeply into depth psychology as you are now currently, where you're in the process of getting your PhD in depth psychology in the somatic studies program. How do you think that the understanding of depth psychology has actually shifted or changed your perspective on this, or has it? Has it deepened it instead?
It's amazing because when I was writing Take the Leap, I didn't know what depth psychology was. I wasn't a Jungian. It wasn't part of my vocabulary. It wasn't material I had read. My perspective had very much come from a more spiritual kind of perspective, and my readings had not been so much scholarly. And what was interesting was the first day, in the first session, when I attended Pacifica and I was sitting in classes and listening to descriptions about depth psychology and somatics, and I mean, this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek, I was like, who read my book? Because what was so interesting was what I had written had so much of the philosophy of depth psychology and somatics all in it, yet I had never been informed by reading any of the masterminds of, you know, the shoulders we stand on in depth psychology. So I discovered that we were speaking about so many of the same things, but with a different vocabulary, a whole different vocabulary, a different vellum, an overlay, a different lens, and how the descriptives were different, but the essence of it was so similar. Hillman, The Soul's Code, I had read after that, and it was so shocking to me. How did I know these things? Because I hadn't read any depth psychology up until that point, till I started school. And now that I am into my second year, it's already massively changed my life. My commitment, my depth, my focus is becoming very integrated, who I am, my life's work, my schooling is all becoming one streamlined path. And it's all informing one another. And now I'm finding that I can't write without citation and reference and the contrast and the brilliance of, you know, all the people that I'm studying and the theories and the philosophies. It's absolutely magnificent. I know you know the experience.
I do, yes. And I really also greatly appreciated the academic rigor that came through the program, through Pacifica itself. But I also am really fascinated by how you seem to be tapping into really what was an archetypal idea. You somehow, we would say in the real world, whatever that is, I guess we would call that through osmosis on some level. But as we know it now, of course, Jung's idea of the collective unconscious and the ways in which those ideas are available and people variously can tap into those or they manifest in various ways is really a fascinating one to me. Are there other ideas or even other authors and thinkers in the field of depth psychology that have had tremendous impact on you? Which have been your favorites so far, and what topics have called out to you?
Well, I would jump into what I'm currently doing, but I first would like to talk about Robert Johnson and the unlived life and inner work and the work with active imagination. And for me, working with Jungian active imagination, I realized I've been doing my whole life, but again, framed within a different vocabulary, a different way of looking at it, which I very much did automatic writing. So when I would sit down and I'd open up and invite whoever was coming rather than a dream through, like, very much like active imagination, and I would invite in the conversation and the being would show up and I'd start documenting the conversation. so when I read Inner Work by Robert Johnson, it was like, wow, I'm home. This feels so right. And I started working with that, and then I looked at his other books, and The Lived and Unlived Life is very much what I'm deeply moved by, this idea of choice. We make choices in our life, and when we make certain choices, then our pathway goes in that direction. But there's all the choices that we don't make, and that's that unlived life that Johnson talks about. And it's also a fascination of mine, because very much when we're born into these lives, and of course epigenetics now is really coming into my field, very much pointing towards dissertation, the whole idea of ancestral DNA coming through us. But even if we're being born into this world, these precious little babies, and for one nanosecond, here we are born fully locked and loaded with all our gifts that we determined before our birth, and here we brought them in. This is very much my philosophy. And we're born in with these gifts, but then we are met by the social enculturation we're born into, which would be parents, family, extended family, communities, religious affiliations, government, schools, etc. And these enculturations have a way of taking us off our pathway, perhaps, into a pathway that is more a projection of what somebody else wants for us, rather than allowing that acorn, in Hillman's words, to unfold for us to really unfold and express our own unique genius. And so when I met up with Johnson's work about the lived and unlived life, that really resonated with me very strongly, very strongly. And, of course, much of Jung. And I'm so enjoying eco-psychology right now and new animism. And I'm just all over the place, very excited by every single course I've had. It's like, oh, it's this. It's the world according to research now, understanding what my philosophical perspectives are and my methodologies and my theories. And it's like, oh, my God, I'm so excited.
Yeah, well, I can really relate. I mean, I have to say, you know, taking a depth psychology program is a bit like being a kid in a candy store. So there's a lot of amazing knowledge and learning to be had, and particularly at Pacifica, where, you know, there's just such a diversity of thought and a plethora of really fascinating classes and contributors who have sort of amassed there over the many years. And going back to this whole idea of unlived life, I was just thinking, even Jung said something about that. He was talking about how nothing has a stronger influence psychologically on people and people's kids, actually, than the unlived life of the parent. And, when we're able to dig into that and to start becoming aware of what that part of us is, I really think that that's also very healing for future generations, because people are no longer having to pass that on or project that onto their kids and to future generations. And so I think that there's a real aspect of healing that's very profound that is not talked about all that often.
That's very interesting. Yeah. And when I mentioned epigenetics earlier, I was discovering through my field work, this first field work that I did, and of course it's somatics, it's depth somatics, so it's embodied, it's in being informed, not only depth somatically, but through embodiment, through the felt sense. So it's psyche, soma, and spirit all integrated. So there's no cutting it off from the neck up, right? It's full integration. And experiencing all this through a somatic experience, which is something I focused on. I focused on how is my body informing me about my life experiences when I observe people, and how do I respond to that, and what is that intuition? It's crossing over into intuition. It's crossing over into trusting oneself and going into this deep unconscious place, into that unconscious in the depths of psyche, and allowing that to inform me, but coming through my body to inform me, not just in an intellectual process. It's fascinating, very fascinating, about the lived and unlived life, right? And helps how to make decisions and choices from a very different perspective than what we're accustomed to doing.
Absolutely. So let's dig into that a little bit, because this has been such a key piece of your work for so long. And also, as you mentioned, it was kind of the piece that reared its head decades ago that has now come through in such a powerful way. And that's the whole idea of calling. And so when people are looking for their calling, a lot of people I talk to have really struggled with this in some ways. Our culture has their ideas about it, as you mentioned. Our families often have their ideas about it. And yet sometimes I think that we get so enveloped in all of that that we are unable to consciously identify for ourselves even what our real passion is. Or maybe we don't have the time for it because we're so busy working at that job that we had to take to pay the rent or whatever it is. So can we talk about passion and calling? What are those things and how do we access them?
Big question, isn't it? It is. And I would say there's many levels and many perspectives we could access this from. From Take the Leap's perspective, which was before I was involved with depth psychology, knowingly, was I realized in our culture, as you just said, life goes at a really fast speed. You know, jumping up in the morning, getting everybody ready off for the day, getting to work, going da-da, and getting back home. And then it's like, wow, is there time for anything else? And what is that? I don't even remember what I love to do. Have you ever heard anybody say that? I don't even know what I love to do anymore. I've been so busy that I haven't had time to think about it. So I feel that there's quite a few factors involved there. And one is, first of all, just slowing down and thinking, well, I can't slow down. How would I do that? Right? Simple, simple things. One could get up 15 minutes to 30 minutes earlier and have their cup of tea and sit quietly and let the day rise within them instead of jumping up and you're on the treadmill. You're already happening. So how we begin our day and how we close our day, if we do that with this peaceful intention, really letting things brew in ourselves, like that cup of tea or coffee or just those morning feelings, listening to birds out the window. I'm really big on creating spaces of solitude and peace and rest. And I really learned this after raising three kids. It makes a huge difference, and I had to find ways of making time for myself. Now, many people, I'm not a television person, so I don't have an issue with a clicker, but a lot of people use that for self-soothing, right? Self-care, just click on the TV and sort of zone out. But instead of doing that, if you just sat down and relaxed and maybe decided, oh, I'd like to do something, so maybe I'm going to just draw for a half hour instead. So I created this thing I call 15 minutes a day, and what it is for 30 days, we make a commitment for 30 days that 15 minutes each day, I'm going to do something I might enjoy. So what that could look like, because for the people who have no idea what that could be, you could say, okay, I'm going to start with coloring with crayons in a coloring book. 15 minutes. Okay, so you keep a little log. Day one. 15 minutes from 7 to 7:15, I colored in a coloring book with crayons. How did I feel? Ridiculous, right? Day two, the same thing. You know, color with crayons, 7 to 7:15. How do I feel about this? I don't have time for this. I don't know why I made this commitment. Then maybe we fast forward to day number seven, and from 7 to 7:20, I colored with crayons in a coloring book. And I think I want to maybe try colored pencils or acrylics. So the next entry might be, from 7 to 7:45, I painted with acrylics. How did I feel? This is beautiful. I forgot about all my work concerns, and I just went into what I was doing. I forgot about everything around me. So you're getting the idea. And by the end of 2 weeks, I've been painting from 7 to 8:30. I'm working in acrylics, but I think I want to jump to oils, right? And the progression goes to perhaps by the end of the month, this person has discovered through this process of starting something simple like coloring with crayons that they're finding peace. They're letting their consciousness stream. They're able to do that traveling thing that we need to do and allowing our creative expression to expand. And then by the end of the month, that person might be saying, wow, I want to take a class in oils and then maybe have a little gallery show with the other students, and maybe we can do that for the benefit of some children who don't have art supplies, and we could give them that money. So the idea is to kind of trick ourselves into committing to ourselves, to take care of ourselves, and to begin to probe this process of creativity by something simple and small, and then allowing it to unfold. And when it's really filling us, then the turn is to be able to octave that and gift it out into the community, out into the world. That's the full cycle of what I envisioned with that. And I found, working with clients, that it's been highly successful as one way to begin to tap this.
You know, I can really relate to that because I'm just looking back at an experience in my own life where there was a point when I was completely overwhelmed by a job in the corporate world and not feeling like I had time for myself, not feeling like there was a track for me to be more fulfilled in that particular position. And I remember I started taking yoga classes and something just shifted so profoundly in that, simply because, and I always look back now and think it's because I actually allowed the space in my life for something new to come in. Before, I didn't have that opening in the same way. And so I can really relate to that, and I love what you're talking about. And, you know, you chose art as an example, and I don't know how many people actually feel that they're artistic, but there are clearly ways in which we can allow that kind of space to come in and therefore the spirit to flow, if you will, or soul to speak to us. Yeah, so even if you don't end up doing something with the art, for example, as your calling, it may just open the door or be a portal to something else.
Well, yes, and so what happens often with something simple like coloring with crayons in a coloring book is, you know, many people say, I'm not a creative person. Well, just by our very existence, we're creative, right? The most creative thing is being born into these lives and existing, and that's, you know, every day you're making choices every moment. That's a creative act. But how to translate that into something that's personally satisfying, I'm actually a musician, so I'd be very drawn to doing this in a musical processing way. But the idea of something simple that we've all done, many of us have done, is coloring, right? So it's something that could lead to building erector sets or, you know, engineering things, or it could lead to sculpting. It could lead to photography and going out into nature. There's so many ways of approaching it. And as you said, it's just one example of saying, okay, I'll just start with this. It's a portal.
Yeah. So you had mentioned active imagination earlier, and I'm curious if you have already thought about ways that you might integrate some of these more depth psychological practices into such a program or a practice as you just described, a 30-day program like that. Would you actually recommend that people do active imagination in a process like that, or are there other ways that you have envisioned employing the depth psychological piece of it? I mean, it's a simple practice, but it just seems like it's so valuable if you'll actually follow through and do it. But it seems like then it follows that the depth psychological piece of it would add even more value to it.
Well, of course we'd like to think that way, and I absolutely 100% agree. And so this is emerging since after writing the book, because I wasn't involved consciously, as I said, with depth psychology. But the fact that I'd been working with what we call active imagination always was something that I often recommended and worked with people, was this process of them inviting in who was speaking to them for them to become very quiet and allow that to emerge. Whether we were sitting together and having the conversation or for them to be writing out and recording it and then allowing that to inform them in their creative process. And so it's interesting because I very much am now working with that much more in my private practice, which has been so enjoyable and so enriching. And I will also say I'm using this process for the book I'm writing right now, myself, Active Imagination. It's really guiding me through the entire process of this book I'm currently on.
Yeah, that's the part that we hadn't talked about, because you've been such a success as a coach and to connect with other people around what they're doing in their lives. But of course, you are applying these same kind of techniques and practices to your own work. Is that book at a point where you are ready to share something about that? What are you working on?
I'm at the beginning of it, because when I was first writing it, I was doing all the research and I really thought it was a nonfiction book along the lines that I like to do. And I'm realizing now it's, I can't really call it fiction. It's going to, it could be. It may end up being a fictional book. So it's just taken that turn. And though for me personally, it would be a personal journey, but often telling a story, you know, in nonfiction, oftentimes we're explaining things and spelling it out. And I thought, wouldn't this be more interesting if the journey was informed through the act of imagination and through this way of writing and allow it to unfold as a tale and let it stand up its own accord at whatever level someone wants to take it, which of course is very depth psychological, right? What we source out in the unconscious, what were the symbols, what's speaking to us, what archetypes are showing up, or is it just the story and you're being deeply moved by it because it's a story that you're resonating with and perhaps the reader doesn't even know why, but I'm feeling it in my solar plexus, this gut. The energy is received really similarly, whether they're understanding, oh, I'm being informed by, this is an archetypal story of a journey, and this is maybe a journey into the underworld, and this is a process of individuation. Or maybe it just reads like a wonderful tale, but they get the same benefit without understanding the depth psychological components of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the best books I've ever read have been the ones that were not overtly spelling it out, but clearly there's something in them that resonates, that speaks to our own unconscious and our longing for what Jung called the symbolic life, the capacity to connect around story and myth and symbol and the deeper meanings that they carry for each one of us. So I find that really profound. And you know what I'm thinking of as you're saying all that, too, is I'm coming back to the idea of epigenetics and the ancestral piece of it. That really grabbed my attention, and I realized that I have a profound interest in that as well. You had mentioned that you have a growing fascination for it. What specifically is interesting to you about epigenetics and our ancestral past?
Thank you for asking, because it's a process for me now that's unfolding, and I noticed in my field work, it took place at an international women's summit, a conference I was a speaker at along with 19 other women. And it was magnificent. And in our field work, we set up what are the ethical components, where's the shadow. What my ethnographic notes were very much about, you know, somatically informed. And so as I was going along, it was all fabulous. But then I had this total knee replacement surgery. And then as a part of the recovery, I realized it was deeply informing me about some of the shadowy stuff that had happened during the conference. And then I realized how I had held this in my body, you know, these feelings that were emerging, and they were being identified and released in the recovery process from this surgery. And then I realized that I had noticed some of these behaviors and some of these senses, these feelings in my mother and then in my grandmother. And it made me wonder, how had this been passed down through the generations? And was this only mine? Or was it part of my mother's story and my grandmother's story? And then there was an actual component to where the leg confirmation, why I had this surgery, my mother has that and her mother had it. And it started leading me down the pathway of, who am I and what's my purpose and how much are all these pieces of me my own, or am I living the idea of, are these some of the pieces my mother or grandmother or great-grandmother had not lived and now I am? So these are some of the questions that are swirling around me. And I also love the idea that I had an intervention. By having this surgery, I have two really straight legs. And this intervention that I had at this summit, I was able to change an energy flow of something that had happened, and I empowered myself. We don't have time to go into it, but I actually empowered myself and changed how I had responded in the past. And I noticed it's how my mother had responded and my grandmother. So I'm very interested in the idea of our making choices, of living a life that we want to live, the idea of genetic encoding, the idea of individual encoding, and how do we turn off and on these DNA codes, or how do we change the trajectory of our lives to align with the gifts that we were born with?
I find it absolutely fascinating. I, again, just think that there's something really powerful there. As a topic of research or inquiry, I think that we need more of that in the world. There's a lot there that is really making sense for me, and I think that a lot of people will resonate with as well. And it brings us back to kind of where we started, actually, which was the whole idea of how do we begin to realize the gifts that we each have individually, our own unique individual gifts, and begin to allow those to arise in our world, arise in us, and to make their way out into the world through us as the vehicle. And I feel like there's so much soul loss in our culture these days, and so much of it is about people just being disoriented and not having allowed that to happen, or just unconsciously reliving historical moments that have come down through our minds. and our ancestors. And so I just think it's really powerful, and I'm very excited to hear you talking about it in this way.
Oh, I'm so happy to be discussing it with you. And I have to say, there aren't too many forums where I could really discuss this in a way that, you know, we're in a depth psychological community, which is so beautiful. And to have the opportunity to discuss this with you, it just makes me feel so full, and it's such an enriching gift. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome. And it does occur to me, being able to talk about these kinds of things that are meaningful within a container that can hold that, just such as this and such as even the audience is listening to it, it's yet another portal, isn't it, that allows something new to come through. And so I'm very grateful for that as well. And I certainly don't take it for granted. So, Heather, this has been just really fascinating. And I just wanted to remind everybody that if you'd like to learn more about Heather's work, you can find her website at www.heathermccloskeybeck.com. Let me spell that. Heather, H-E-A-T-H-E-R, McCloskey, spelled M-C-C-L-O-S-K-E-Y, Beck, B-E-C-K.com. And, of course, Heather, you have your Facebook page, which is Peace Flash, that you had spoken of at the beginning, and that's facebook.com/peaceflash. And then you also have Facebook pages, your author page, Heather McCloskey Beck Author, and Finding Your Way Back to You, which is some of the other work that we had discussed about calling and making space in your life. You have a great blog site, by the way, on your website, so I encourage people to go there and read some of Heather's blogs and really get to know a little bit more about the work that she's been doing. And I look so forward to seeing what's going to come next once you have completed the coursework at Pacifica and you dig into your research and dissertation work, Heather. So wishing you lots of luck there.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel very guided by this whole thing. So I've got a lot of partners helping me, right?
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Both visible and invisible ones.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I've been speaking with Heather Beck, who is, of course, an author and a writer, and she wrote the book Take the Leap, and you'll be seeing more from her in the future, I'm sure. Thank you so much, Heather.
Thank you so much, Bonnie.
You've been listening to Discussions in Depth Psychology, powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute with host Bonnie Bright.
Learn more at pacificapost.com or at pacifica.edu.